Welcome to episode 11 of the Skip to the End podcast. Happy New Year. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Mark.
And on this episode of the podcast, we're going to be reviewing the new film starring Michael Keaton, Birdman. We're going to talk about our favourite movies of 2014, as well as our worst movies of 2014. We're going to talk about our top three hangover movies, those movies you always watch when you're a little bit worse for wear after a night on the tiles. We've got our rewatch this week when we're watching 70s Western Westworld. And we're also going to have a little chat about the upcoming Oscar nominations. So, let's get started.
So it's that time to discuss our top five movies from 2014. Now, this was probably the hardest task, and I've only just finished today. So, Adam, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll go with my fifth choice. X-Men, Days of Future Past.
Oh, you've finally seen it, have you?
Yes, finally seen it, after a story for another time.
Yeah, another time, yeah.
That nearly caused the end of my relationship. but no, I've finally seen it. It was, a very good film. Really enjoyed it, so it's going to make my top five. I have a few comic book films in my top five, to be honest. It is my passion. It's something I really enjoy. Yeah. So X-Men makes it at number five. Great story, great cast. I mean, Michael Fassbender, James McAvoy played their own versions of Professor X and Magneto again. I thought they did a wonderful job in First Class.
Yeah.
So to come back and do it, basically repeat the achievement, but then to also see Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart in the roles in the future. And I just really like the dual narrative they had in the film.
Yeah, I'm automatically annoyed that I forgot to include this in my top five. But it's good, it means we still get to talk about it. I absolutely loved it. I thought it was a great film. I would probably go as far to say as that it's my favourite X-Men movie.
Oh yeah, no, I'd say the same thing.
I thought it was such a well-crafted story. I loved having the new, younger guys in it. Yeah. But also, like you said, having McKellen and Stewart. Well, and of course having Hugh Jackman in it as Wolverine.
And of course having the new guys, but in the future.
Yeah.
So you had the new team in the future as well, which was awesome. But no, I had to include it. Thought it was brilliant.
Yeah.
And some of the story, obviously, is not exactly the same as the actual comic series they did for Days of Future Past. But I think they had to make Wolverine the central focus of it. He's kind of the lead. Hugh Jackman's kind of the face of the franchise nowadays.
Right. Well, am I right in thinking that in the original comic book it was Kitty Pryde?
Yeah, Kitty Pryde. Yeah.
And I'm glad they brought Ellen Page back as Kitty Pryde because she was in that risible Brett Ratner X-Men film, wasn't she?
No, it doesn't
exist to you. Yeah.
It doesn't sound
familiar. And you know, not her fault, but that was a piss poor film. So I'm glad that she actually got to come back to the franchise and play a decent part in it.
Well, one of the things I really enjoyed about it was the fact that they went back in time and changed everything. So essentially, the first three films now haven't happened.
Yeah. Do you think they did that just to wind up Brett Ratner?
I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so.
It's a shame that film didn't have Vinnie Jones in.
Yeah, that was the one that is missing. Yeah, the Juggernaut, bitch!
Terrible. That is the worst ever film.
So that's my number five. It is
a hell of a good choice. I agree. I would certainly put it in my top 10 if I was going that far.
I can't believe I missed it off either. I really can't.
Good film. My first choice, number five, is Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Nice.
I absolutely love that film. I went in with reasonably high expectations because I thought Rise of the Planet of the Apes was pretty damn good and I didn't expect it to be. And I really enjoyed that. So I went in with high expectations for this one and it exceeded them. I thought the human characters played by the likes of Gary Oldman, I thought they were good, but it was the motion capture acting that was superb. I mean, everyone knows how great Andy Serkis is. So Andy Serkis as Caesar, we knew was going to be good.
This is the huge debate now raging about whether, you know, he should be nominated for it, because it is acting.
It is acting. I mean, and you can see, they'll show videos where you can see him in his mocap suit, and you see that all the facial expressions that then appear on the chin are him.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's not computer generation, it's him. But more so than him, I thought Toby Kebbell, as Cobra, saw the movie. I thought he was the best character in it, best motion capture. Great story, great fun film, thoroughly enjoyed it, so that's made my list at number
five. Strangely enough, this was the film I took off to put Days of Future Past on it.
Yeah, same here. It's like my number six. But I actually got that for Christmas. And I watched it in 2D instead of 3D.
Yeah.
And it did actually highlight, again, a lot more detail. I think sometimes in 3D it gets lost, doesn't it?
It does take away.
And some of the facial expressions of Kobo, when he's being a bit sinister and he's up to something, and when he's playing with the humans, and that scene with the guns and stuff.
Yeah.
Honestly, the look on his face is unbelievable. And like you said, the motion capture they use is the future, and it's unbelievable film, and fantastic.
Yeah, loved it.
My number five is Captain America 2, mm-hmm. so Winter Soldier.
Yep.
I actually thought this might have been last year, but it isn't. It kind of was it the start of this year?
Yeah, it seems, but
yeah, it's every March time.
I think we went to see it at the cinema, didn't we, guys, before we started this, and it was unbelievable. You know, I love the first film, getting the backstory and finding out back in the day how it all came about, but it was just so nice to see him in the actual city and just the action shots. It was like more of a spy movie.
Yeah.
It was like a throwback to the sort of 70s spy films of old, yeah.
I really, really enjoyed all the characters. I liked how much of a push they gave to Scarlett Johansson in the movie, that the fact that it was pretty much as a sidekick throughout the film.
Yeah, Black Widow was very much a focal point of the film, just as much as Steve Rogers was.
Yeah.
It's actually my number four.
That's where we were going anyway, to your number four, so that's perfect. As you guys know, at the time, I didn't particularly enjoy the film. After coming out of the cinema, I was quite disappointed with it.
Yeah, me and Mark were actually talking about being probably the best film, Marvel film we'd seen.
Yeah, whereas I thought it paled in comparison to quite a few of them, but it was one of those that just, over the weeks, I kept thinking on it and coming back to it in my head, and I started to think that I might have enjoyed it more than I realised I had. And then when I watched it again, not so long ago, I realised, no, this is actually really bloody good.
It's great, even the introduction of Falcon was something that was a masterclass. They did it very well.
Yeah.
I mean, introducing the character at the start, where he just keeps running past going, on your left, on your left.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. They kind of got everything right in that film, for me.
Yeah, I thought it all came together brilliantly. I didn't think that the villain was the strongest, to be fair. But it didn't necessarily need to be. I think there was enough going on that it didn't need.
It was very much more about S.H.I.E.L.D. as the villain.
Yeah.
More than actually a person, or that the deputy director, the director, or whatever title he had in the actual film. And it was very much Nick Fury versus the world, as well as his team of the Avengers, basically.
And one of the best things that came out of that film for me is the Marvel's Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show. Prior to that film coming out, it had been okay. It was sort of a freak of the week, villain of the week type show.
Very much critically panned as well.
It had been critically panned because people had high expectations. But then after the fall of S.H.I.E.L.D. in Captain America 2, they then had no choice but to bring that into Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in the TV show. And it completely changed the makeup of the show to the point where the last third of season one was phenomenal. And everything I've seen so far of season two has been just as good. So I'm really excited for the future of that show, and this comes as a direct result of Captain America 2. But he's not really hands-on, you see. I think it's his brother Jed who does all the actual day-to-day.
I was going to say, because anything Joss does, it's a slow burnout.
This is true. I mean, Dollhouse was crap to begin with, but got really good towards the end.
For everything he's done, I mean, you look at even Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the fact that made his name. The later series of that, after it got into it, became very good. And then Firefly, if you only got one series, but it was amazing from the start for me.
I reckon, this is a bit off topic, but I think we're going to see more Firefly now. He's got the world at his feet. I think what he's going to do, he'll finish Avengers, he'll take a step back and go, do you know what, give this to the fans, here you go.
He has kind of said, hasn't
he's
he?
He's hinted.
He said when, it's all about if Nathan villains free.
Yeah.
Because he's doing Castle.
That's right, yeah.
But he'll
anyway,
be free.
Move on to Ben's.
Well, and just to say, you know, on that same point, no doubt a company like Netflix, who've got a few quid in the bank, would be quite happy to say, oi, Joss. Here's a few quid, make a new series of Firefly.
You've done it low budget before with Firefly, so...
Maybe it could be on Twitter for a launch of Skip the End Network.
Yeah, coming soon, 2015.
But then number four.
My number four was Gone Girl.
Okay.
A superb movie. Prior to seeing the movie, I read the book because I'd heard a lot of good things about it. I really enjoyed the book. Wasn't particularly blown away by the ending, but I think that was more my fault. It's just it wasn't the ending I wanted. It's not that it was a bad ending, it just wasn't the ending I wanted. Went to see the film. It translated really, really well into film. If you want to hear more specific thoughts on that, go back and listen to our previous podcast episode where we reviewed it. But I thought it translated great to screen. I thought the ending worked better on screen, but that might be because I'd already read the book and I knew what was coming. I thought the acting was uniformly great. Ben Affleck, and especially Rosamund Pike, I thought was superb. David Fincher at the helm, you know it's going to be well directed. Just a damn, damn good movie. And another one that I've found myself thinking about a lot more. And I haven't seen it again yet, but I hope to do so as soon as possible.
No, that's a good choice. Strangely enough, this didn't actually make my top five. Mm. And the reason for that was, my top five was judged purely on not only a multitude of factors. Like if I was going on story and acting and direction, Gone Girl would be up there.
Yeah.
But I'm going on whole cinematic experience, how I feel now. If I could rewatch it, And for me, it just kind of missed out on that.
Mm-hmm.
There's no denying it's a great film, and it's definitely going to get one or two at least Oscar nominations. But again, we'll discuss that a bit later in the show.
Yeah.
But for me, it just didn't have that staying power when I was making my list.
Oh, fair enough, yeah.
I think this is my number choice for number four, so it nicely led on. It could have been my film of the year.
Yeah.
If you'd asked me a few weeks ago, it probably was on the chart at number one, but I swapped it around and thought, like what Adam said, what's got the most stability, what will I rewatch?
Yeah.
It's not the film I want to keep going back to, but I didn't know anything about the actual story, so I hadn't read the book, and I absolutely loved it, and the twist got me every time.
Yeah.
I absolutely can't praise that film enough, and a lot of people I know hated it. A lot of people I know loved it. It was kind of a Marmite film.
Yeah, it was divisive, yeah.
And the thing is with that movie, I think, like Adam said, the acting was superb. Affleck in that role was unreal, and I believed in him. And, yeah, I read the book afterwards instead of the other way around, and I do prefer the book, but the movie I felt did it justice, and it wasn't those things where people, oh, God, you need to read the book, it's not a patch. No, for me, they're both very good.
Yeah.
A lot of credits to them both.
Absolutely, I agree.
I have been intending to actually go ahead and read the book.
It's worth it.
It's one of those things where I think I just wanted to give it some time before I actually went and did it. I didn't want the film to be fresh in my mind. So, to be honest, now is probably about the right time to kick on with the book.
Cause
it's been about 2 or 3 months since the film came out. So I'll probably pick that up mid-January.
I would go ahead and do that. And for me, the biggest thing that makes the book significantly better than the film, well, not significantly, but makes it better than the film, is you get more into the head of both of the characters, but specifically the female character. Yeah. You know, Rosamund Pike does a great version of her on screen, and it's written really well. But when you actually get to read more of her diary entries in the book and get inside her head, it adds more depth to that character. So that's one of the reasons why the book is superior. But yeah, go ahead and read that, Adam. You won't regret it.
I actually spoke to my dad today on the phone and said, because I lent it him, and he watched it yesterday, and he said how much he loved it. But he said to me, the one thing I didn't get about that film, and he's not a big film lover, he said, so she told the police that she was handcuffed up to the bed, and that's how she then slashed the throat of the guy that went for him. So my dad said, how did she go from being handcuffed to the bed, which she told the police, to slashing this guy's throat? And that's something I actually completely forgot. And he was like, there's a bit of a plot hole there. And I was like, I've never thought about that, and I don't know how you picked up on that, Dad. But he said, that's what she told the police, and they just went with it.
I'd have to go back and check that.
Get out of the top five.
Yeah, shit. Worst movie ever. But that might not be a plot hole. That might be intentional to say that the police overlooked because they were so keen to just write her off as innocent.
I want to put this to bed now.
Exactly. So that might have been fully intentional. I need to go back and check that in the film and both
he's
the book.
He's probably wrong, but I was quite impressed that he didn't pick up on, he actually brought that to light more than, you know, clearly maybe her ass or something else beforehand. Number three, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, so number three for me, Imitation Game.
Cool.
Very good movie. Didn't make my list, but a very good movie.
I went for it again based on the fact that it is a film I would watch again.
Yeah.
Cumberbatch is superb. And amazingly, Keira Knightley is superb as well.
Yeah.
And I just love the entire story. And to be honest, I'm quite a big fan of things that are set during that time as well. The whole World War II era. And seeing from the perspective of the decoders was really interesting because it's a quite a lot that wasn't really paid attention to until recently. I mean, obviously, they cracked the Enigma code and it was classified for years and years and years until that became obsolete technology. But the fact that that was an in-depth look at something that I didn't really know about really interested me. So it's something I definitely watch again. Acting prompts is brilliant. I love the story.
Yeah.
And as much as you feel ashamed about what kind of happened towards the end of Alan Turing's life,
disgraceful.
It's portrayed incredibly well on screen.
It is, and it was a tough one for me to not put in my five. It was the one I think that was banging on the door the most for me to get into my five and didn't quite make it. A really, really good film. Moving film, great story, great acting, just all around top film.
And just the way it transfers from point A to point B and has, again, the dual narratives.
Yeah.
It just keeps you fixed. It keeps you just watching the screen, wondering what's going to happen next.
It really does, yeah.
Cool. Number three for you, Ben. Now it's getting serious.
Yeah, there's been a bit of a theme with what I've spoken about so far, and that's films where I've walked away from the cinema and had to think more about them, and they've deepened in my mind. And this,
Pink
to me,
Turtles.
It is the Turtles. This is the perfect example of that, Nightcrawler. I think all of us, when we went to see Nightcrawler together, and when we left the cinema, we were all kind of like, what did we just see?
Yeah.
And it took a bit of time to let it filter through the brain to determine what we thought of it. And it took me a few days. And then after about a week, I was just sat there on my sofa and I went, that film was amazing. It was bloody brilliant. And now I can't get enough. I just think it's mesmerising. And Jake Gyllenhaal's performance is something special. I've not quite seen a performance like that before.
I completely agree with this. It was very difficult for me to leave this out, as like you said, with The Imitation Game. But I did the same thing as you did. I watched the film and I was so mesmerised by Gyllenhaal's performance that I kind of overlooked the film as a whole.
Yeah.
And then as time went on, people spoke to me about it, said, oh, you've seen that, is it any good? And I'd go, oh yeah, it is good. I'd talk more about it and about it and about it. And at that point I realised, I love this film.
Mm, yeah.
Everything about it. I love the fact that it's set at night. I love the fact that literally it's such a dark film set at such a dark time. And it's just this whole shoving the camera in people's faces.
Yeah.
As they're basically, some of them are breathing their last breath. I think in one of the scenes, someone actually is about to breathe their last breath and he's just filming it.
Yeah.
And I was so captivated by Jake Gyllenhaal's performance.
It's a phenomenal.
Overglossed the entire film until weeks later.
Phenomenal piece of work. And I found that this is the film this year that I've most been telling people to see.
Yeah.
Like if I'm just having casual chats with, you know, friends of mine who aren't big movie buffs, they just like to watch decent films. This is the one I keep saying to people, have you heard of Nightcrawler? Oh, it's about this, this and this. You've got to seek it out. You've got to see Jake Gyllenhaal.
Well, I'm getting a bit annoyed because that was my third choice as well.
You're copying me. It's as if we planned this, but we haven't.
No, genuinely, none of us know each other. But the thing I found about Nightcrawler as well is everyone I've spoken to that's a big fan of cinema, not one of them didn't like it.
Yeah.
So where people have been divided by Gone Girl, even other films, you know, that's the one film that's consistently been positive when I've spoken to people. But again, I actually watched this last week. And I ordered it from America because I wanted to watch it again. And it's absolutely stunning. It is definitely a film to rewatch because in the first film you're kind of blown away by the twist and towards the end, and I'm not going to spoil it, but you know there's parts in there that you don't want to know about because there's some big talking points, but you really do buy into Jake's character. And when he's using even the fact of getting sex from the woman as power, it is really dark. And the way he acts, even when he's standing back and absorbing all the information of how a studio works, I was just watching his face, because in the first time you're watching the film, you've seen everything that's going on. I was just watching him. There's a main scene where they're doing the editing room and they're going through the footage, and he's just standing at the back, like the cat who's got the cream, just watching everyone, like, look at me, I'm the master. And his facial expressions throughout the whole film, he's definitely, for me, up there for the, you know, Oscar contender this year, because outstanding.
Yeah, it is. It is a great piece of work, and we will come to that when we discuss the Oscar nominations a little bit on later on in the show.
If you've got the same number two, I'm going to be annoyed. Just listen to Ben for the rest of the cast. Right, Adam, number two. This is it now.
Yeah, no problem. So the moment I realised this film was actually came out over here in 2014, it went into the top. It went into number two straight away. Mm-hmm. Inside Llewyn Davis.
Okay.
Yep.
Haven't seen it.
Oh, absolutely amazing. I've spoken about it before, actually. Yeah. On one of the podcasts, I think it's favourite directors when I mentioned the Coen brothers. I mean, I really liked the Coen brothers, and then when I saw this film, I fell in love with their whole back catalogue, basically. Yeah. Oscar Isaac, who plays Llewyn Davis, is phenomenal. The storyline's brilliant. It's so gritty, as you'd expect, I guess, from a Coen brothers movie. But I don't really want to say too much about it because you need to see it.
Sure.
It's a visual masterclass.
I don't want to watch a film about folk singers. I couldn't give a shit.
You got Justin Timberlake in it.
Oh, brilliant. I'm
there
sold.
You go. Done.
Oh, Christ.
But it's very good, Ben. I would recommend at least giving it a chance.
As it's made your top five films of the year, I will endeavour to watch it then.
I think you'll enjoy it. Yeah. I think you really would.
I'm going to hold you to that.
And you trust me on the Flash and Arrow.
And that's true. I did.
I'm completely behind Adam. I loved it.
You always are.
Now, number two for you, Ben.
My number two, I think I'm going to piss on your guys' chips a little bit here or get ahead of you, but my number two was Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay.
I've got a feeling that's going to pop up in both of your lists at some point.
I've not seen it.
Yeah. I'm not going to say too much because I've got a feeling it is going to be higher up in your list, so we'll discuss it in more detail in a bit. But it was the most fun film I've seen this year or in several years. It's the best Marvel film I've seen, and there's some stiff competition in that. Mm-hmm. It was just joyful. It was unabashed joy for me. I had this big shit-eating grin on my face through the whole runtime of the film. I left still chuckling at some of the lines, some of the gags. I'm going to buy myself a little dancing group soon. I think they're out now. I'm going to go get one of those. Yeah, like Goldust, I imagine. It was just a great, fun film. Fun for all the family. Brilliant repeat value. You know, I've seen it a couple of times now. Yeah. Great film. I will watch it. It's going to be like a Star Wars to me that I will watch a couple of times a year for the rest of my
days.
And
hope it's on TV around Christmas time and things like that.
Superb. Can't wait for the sequel. Amazing film.
So, number two for me is Boyhood.
Yeah.
Boyhood is an absolute masterpiece, and we shouldn't use that word unless it's deserved.
Okay.
I don't know if you guys have seen it.
This is the film I haven't seen yet, but I fully intend to.
It took 12 years to film, and it's the story of basically a boy is going through his very young childhood to becoming kind of a teenager. The director also cast his own daughter in the film. So we get to see it. And all they did is film 1 week for every month for 12 years. So they didn't need to take too much time. It was like a project film. But I watched this on my way back from a holiday when I really had the blues about coming back to England and not looking forward to going back to normal reality. And it was everything I'd asked for from a film. It was nearly 3 hours long. The soundtrack is fantastic. It actually starts with Coldplay, who I'm not a massive fan of. But it reminds you that that's 12 years ago, the song Yellow, and you don't think that's 12 years. But every now and then you get a soundtrack track, which is then from that year. So it goes, we get like Blink 182, which is 8 years ago, etc. But it's just about the acting and the directing and the filming, the cinematography, everything. It reminds me of kind of like Her, that up there with that. It's an absolute incredible film. You both need to see it.
Yeah.
If you can do anything for me, not even, we don't do homework anymore, but go and see that film. When I think it's out in Blu-ray in a couple of weeks. Watch it and then come back in a few weeks and talk about it, because you'd both love it. It's
I will do. I mean, unbelievable. I intended to see it anyway, and then you wrote a really good review of it for our website, skiptotheend.co.uk. And it was a really great review, and at the end of it I got to that thinking, I need to see this now. It's not just a case of want to see it, I need to see this now, or else I feel like I'm missing out on something. So I do intend to see that as soon as possible.
No, I did exactly the same thing the moment I read Mark's review on skiptotheend.co.uk.
Where was that?
Skiptotheend.co.uk, it's our website.
Oh yeah,
the website for podcast band. I realised at that moment that I have to see this film. I'd heard good reviews about it, but it was really Skip to the End review that made me think, I need to watch this.
I think, again, there are people out there that will argue and listen to this and say, you don't know what you're talking about, because it's nothing really happens in the film. Mm. It's one of those films, you know, this guy did Dazed and Confused, etc. So it's there isn't any massive explosions or huge storylines or twists.
No narrative.
It's just a very good, well-made film.
Was the film of it sort of kept secret? Because if it was this long sort of 12-year project, it's one of those things that I imagine we'd have heard about in the press for a decade. Yeah. You know, he's filmed a bit more, blah, blah, blah. But I don't recall ever hearing about it until it came out.
Considering he had, what's the main actor?
Ethan Hawke.
He thought Ethan would have spilled the beans at some point and said, you know, actually, well, you know, during that film, and I had a week off because I had to go back and film. But he's come out recently and said, since the film's come out, that he was always thinking, this is a bit of a risk, I'm not too sure this is going to work.
You could end up doing a week's work every month for
12
years.
I think this could
rubbish.
Be...
and nothing happens.
Yeah. I think this could be one of the front runners at the Oscars, I really do.
Yeah, I think it is going to be there or thereabouts.
Number one for me, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, and it was your number one as well, wasn't it?
That's correct.
So we'll talk about it a bit more in depth now. And something Ben said a bit earlier about Nightcrawler, it is the film that I most recommended this year to people.
Yeah.
Anyone that said, oh, should I go and watch anything in the cinema? Guardians of the Galaxy. Mm-hmm. It's fun. Ben said, all the family love it. Absolutely brilliant. So many jokes, so much great action. Chris Pratt, huge fan of him. Did an article on there, www.skiptotheend.co.uk.
Indeed.
With regards to Chris Pratt, so check that out. But he was just the star of it for me.
Do you know what I really liked about Guardians of the Galaxy? Is the fact that most people that, when I'm always talking about films, you know this, but when I'm talking to people that aren't into films, they're like, shut up, Mark, I don't want to talk. But a lot of the people that are just normal, everyday people, I went with my boyfriend to watch the film.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. Most people are like, oh, I hate Batman, I'm never going to see that, I'm not going to go and see Spider-Man. But a lot of people adapted to this and kind of went,
who hates Batman?
Yeah, well, exactly. but, you know, a lot of people that you wouldn't think would be into this film kind of went, yeah, I really enjoyed that. It was a real fun movie. And it was, like you said, it's the Star Wars of today. I think a lot of people...
It had really broad appeal and it dragged a lot of people in because of word of mouth, because of good reviews.
Exactly. I mean, I'd love to say it's my favourite Marvel film, but you can't have a favourite Marvel film. I mean, it just depends entirely upon your mood.
Yeah.
Whenever someone tells me that, I just don't think they know Marvel at all.
No.
So... I mean, that's just the way. But it's one of those things. I mean, each story of Marvel's different, but Guardians is just that way out there, left field, unbelievable cinematic experience.
And I didn't think it was going to work when they said they've cast Batista. You know, the rest of them we didn't really want to see again. A raccoon running around with a gun in CGI voiced. You know, I thought to myself, this is never. Well, it could work, but I've not got much hope. But fair play.
And the dance off at the end.
Yeah,
absolutely amazing. Hilarious. Chris Pratt hilarious. Batista's even hilarious throughout.
Yes.
Vin Diesel's
soundtrack of the year, in my opinion, as well.
Yeah, it's a damn good film. It's a damn good film. So not as good, though, as my number one choice, which is a film I believe that neither of you have seen. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm fudging dates a little bit here, because this is a 2013 film. However, it was never released in the UK, and it's only been available this year via... it's Tusk. Garbage. It's a film that I have only seen because I managed to get a Spanish Region 2 DVD that came out this year. So I'm counting it as a 2014 film. And it is Snowpiercer. It is an absolutely phenomenal film. Dystopian, futuristic, sci-fi.
I've heard good things about this.
It's unbelievable. God,
like there was like a nuclear war. Most of the people died. Oh, no, that was it. There was an ice age. And most of the planet died. Those people that are left are on this train called the Snowpiercer that just circumnavigates the globe. And then over the years, there's like a caste system, a cultural hierarchy. So at the front of the train, you've got all the haves, and at the back of the train, you've got the have-nots, and it's about how the have-nots rebel. And it's a great sci-fi. It's a completely, incredibly claustrophobic film because it all takes place on a train, obviously. It's a superb film. Chris Evans is the lead, and it's the best work he's ever done. I've always liked Chris Evans, but he started his career sort of as a bit of a poster boy, you know, a pretty boy like he was in the Fantastic Four films. But he's done a lot of good work since, especially like Captain America.
I liked him on Don't Forget Your Toothbrush.
That's a different one.
What?
So it's a great film, and it's a shame that it never got the full release it deserved. It's because it's a Korean film directed by Bong Joon-ho, and it was his first English-language film.
You said it was 2013 release, but I swear there's talk about it being banded for like a best original or adapted screenplay this year.
It's in the running for this year's Oscars, because of the way the dates work for the Oscars. But it was acquired by the Weinstein Company in America, and Harvey Weinstein's just known to be a bit of a prick, and basically he said he didn't want to release it in its current form, he wanted to chop 20 minutes out. Bong Joon-ho didn't want to do this, the fans were in uproar, and they basically convinced him to change his mind, so he decided not to edit it. But then, him being the prick that he is, he then decided to only release it in art cinemas, so it got a tiny release throughout the States. Okay. No one got to see it because he was being petty. And then it didn't really get a release anywhere else in sort of the English-speaking world. It's been released in Korea and a lot of like Spain and France and so on. So it didn't get the wide release it deserved. But I urge people to go out there, watch it on Netflix, it's on there. Import DVD if you must, but it's an absolutely brilliant film.
Apparently, if it's not on Netflix, you can buy a Spanish Region 2 copy.
You can buy a Spanish Region 2 copy. I've got one sitting on my shelf right now.
Well,
so that's that.
We've had quite a few come through on the social network, which is facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast. I'm going to start with my mum again.
Okay.
A big listener I found out this week, so I've got to be fair. My lovely mum.
Yeah, don't be saying anything bad about her again.
No. So, Fault in the Stars, not seen that. Imitation Game and Paddington. Do you know what? Paddington, a lot of people are saying, is really good.
The reviews are great. The trailer was one of the worst pieces of crap I've ever seen.
This week on Paddington Bear Bed, I'm to choke on marmalade sandwiches and die. But yeah. It's supposed to be really good.
But yeah, everyone said it is. The reviews are good. Everyone I that's seen it said it was good.
I've heard really good things about it, but I don't think I'll ever watch it.
No, never. I probably can't.
We've had some new names come through this week, so thanks for those. We had Kim Hawkins with Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, that was a UK release of 2014.
It was December.
I think it was January.
I think we got tickets for the preview there, didn't we?
I mean, we could always talk about honourable mentions from kind of back end of last year, start of this year.
Yeah, well,
Dallas Buyers Club.
Yeah.
If Her was this year, I would have done what you did with Snowpiercer and used that, because, Miles better than anything else. A film called Lone Survivor.
The war film, Mark Wahlberg, he's like the American version.
And John Wick.
Yeah, that's not come out in the UK yet, so I'm assuming this was an American...
No, he lives in America.
Oh, that's fine then.
Yeah.
It comes out next week here, actually.
Fantastic. Ian Evans with Imitation Game, Gone Girl and Guardians, so... Yeah,
for Imitation Game so far.
Mm-hmm. Ellie Howes with Guardians of the Galaxy, Wolf of Wall Street and Pride, which is meant to be really good.
Okay.
Kirsty Warrow, Only Love Left... What is it?
Only Fools and Horses?
Yeah, that's quite awesome.
John Challenger.
Only Lovers Left Alive.
Yeah, I think that is... I think it's a vampire film with Tilda Swinton. Fantastic. Who is brilliant in Snowpiercer, by the way.
Guardians again, and Under the Skin.
Is that the Scarlett Johansson?
Yeah, I've seen that, and I wasn't a fan. I thought it was about 2 hours too long.
I thought it was okay.
It was average.
I haven't seen it. The reviews I've read said it was good, though.
James Ramsden with Calvary, a fantastic film.
Yeah. I've seen it.
Unbelievable. Grand Budapest Hotel, again, really enjoyed that. And I think he's got it wrong, so I'm sure this was last year, but correct me if I'm wrong, 12 Years a Slave.
It was last year. But it might have come out in January
here. I think it came out in January here, actually.
Mark Holloway with Wolf of Wall Street, The Wind Rises. Fantastic film.
Yeah.
And Interstellar.
Yikes.
Wow.
I think he's got
really?
That mixed up, but everyone's got an opinion.
Yeah, they're welcome to.
He has It's not allowed. James Howe with Boyhood, Guardians, and The Raid 2.
Oh, right.
I've not got around to seeing The Raid 2. The first one I thought was great.
Yeah.
Stuart Pickering says, oh, it's his son Riley, Guardians times three.
Good choice.
Fair enough, can't argue.
Fair play.
Ellie with Nightcrawler, Her, and Budapest Hotel. Dave Middleton with The Babadook. Or The Babadook.
Yeah.
However you want to say it. The Babadook. Goes on King People with hairdressers, scissors. But yeah, no. That's a really good film. One of the horrors that
I really enjoyed Babadook when I saw it.
Wolf of Wall Street and Galaxy again. Alan Switzer with Apes and Gone Girl. Wayne Talbot with Nightcrawler. Cold in July, which actually I've just bought. I've not got around to seeing yet, so that must be good. And What We Do in the Shadows, which I've not got around to seeing.
No, I've not
around
seen that,
I think
actually.
That's got some... Is it the guy off... Is it The It Crowd?
Richard Ayoade.
I'm sure he's in it.
Ayoade.
I might be wrong. Natalie Brown with Guardians, Gone Girl, and the latest Hobbit film. She's actually put here, I've not seen it, but I can't leave it out. She's
you that, can
it's
be.
Very
you
confident.
Can, you've not seen
if you're
it.
Not seeing
ridiculous.
It. And finally, Mark Walker.
Oh, they're mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mine's Age of Ultron. It's not seen it, and it's not even this year, but that's mine, because the rules mean nothing.
Finally, Mark Walker with Budapest Hotel, Guardians, and Edge of Tomorrow.
Which I've still not seen, but yeah,
sorry,
the reviews are really good.
Have you that film that's changed its name about 20 times?
Yeah.
What
was
it?
Live
Dying,
by Repeat now or something,
yeah.
Isn't it? What was it originally called? Wasn't going to be Edge of Tomorrow before then.
The name of the book that it's from is All You Need Is Kill.
All You Need. They were going to release
that's
it under that
title.
Name. Changed it to The Edge of Tomorrow. Now they've changed it again, it seems.
I don't think they have actually changed it to that Live, Die, Repeat. That's just on the case. They've
it's
put
more
the slogan
than
bigger than the title, yeah.
Idiots.
Right, is it time for our worst movies of the year?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't put this out to social media because I knew that everyone would just attack a certain film. So let's just spend 5 minutes... Maybe a couple of films that you hate.
Well, I'm just going to go with one. A couple of weeks ago, we actually did do this briefly on the podcast, and we all kind of agreed that Interstellar was a colossal disappointment and that Sin City 2 was gash.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to choose either of those. The film that I'm picking for the worst film of the year, which is one of the most risible pieces of shit I've ever had the misfortune to see, was Sex Tape.
In the words of Adam, it's an abortion of a movie.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, for God's sake... So they decide to make a sex tape, which they then upload to the cloud. Okay, all fine with this so far. That then gets put on all of their iPads. And by all of their iPads, I don't mean the couple that they own. I mean the dozen that they gave out as gifts. Who the frig gives iPads out as gifts? Who are these people that are doing this thing?
Also,
right?
Who syncs them to their own iTunes before giving them out?
Exactly.
Gifts?
Ludicrous. And then who doesn't just do the remote wipe to get rid of it within seconds of realising? The film is so stupid and infuriating, and it angered me so much. Jack Black's in it, and it saddens me that he's come to this, doing crappy cameos as porn barons in shit comedy films.
Yeah,
I hate it so much.
Film.
It is one of the worst films I've ever seen, not just this year, in
ever.
Any given year. Tripe.
If you want to use that as your review out there, to put it on the DVD case.
That was actually really difficult to leave out my top five best films. Now, luckily enough, I haven't actually seen that. And
don't.
Can you see Sex Tapes? See Kim Kardashian's.
Excellent.
Many other good sex tapes are available.
Unlike Talisa. She's dreadful. Anyway, Adam.
I have to go with Sin City 2.
Yeah.
For sheer disappointment. I mean, I know, Ben, you know, we discussed it at a previous point. But Interstellar, as much of a disappointment that was, I'm a huge fan of the Sin City comics. And when I saw A Dame to Kill Before being released on screen, I had such high expectations. Mm-hmm. And that's potentially why I was so critical of it when we actually reviewed it on episode 2 of the podcast. So it was the worst film of the year. The special effects were over the top. It was unnecessary. And for the hype that it had... It was just dreadful. And to be honest, Dumb and Dumber 2 ran it close.
That's mine.
There we go.
Nicely done. Thank you. Dumb and Dumber 2 I thought was an absolute piece of shit. It was trying to be funny when it shouldn't. It was cashing in too long after the original, like Anchorman. I just hated it, and yeah. I'm sorry, but those actors have gone down in my estimation. I want to say Interstellar, but Interstellar is just the biggest letdown of the
year. Yeah,
it's I can't fault it, it's a really bad film. There's parts in that film that were good, like the end credits, but Dumb and Dumber 2 is just absolute horseshit.
I would like to point out that neither me and Mark have seen Sex Tape, though, so...
No, I've seen Sex Tape.
Oh, he's... Yeah, okay.
It's dog shit. I couldn't be involved. All I was going to say was Cameron Diaz looks great for her age.
She really does, yeah.
That's it. She wears like a hockey jersey or some sort of sports top, and I thought, yeah, she looks decent there. But that's the only thing I took from the film.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
And Jason Segel or Segel or whatever you now call
him. Not Steven Seagal's brother.
That'd be cool. You have gone down in my estimations as well. You are oh, starting
he's,
to put
he's
your
gone
name
down
on.
From How I Met Your Mother to this. Jesus, that's a trajectory.
Muppets, but no, you are really starting to become an absolute arsehole.
Excellent, so that sums it up. That's our worst films and our best films of 2014.
Happy New
Bring
year.
On the next year.
Our review this week is Birdman, co-written and directed by Alejandro González Iñárritu. It stars Michael Keaton as Regan Thompson, a former high-powered A-list celebrity who was known for a series of superhero films called Birdman. He's then fallen into a bit of obscurity and decides to try and reinvent himself by putting on a play on Broadway. So, guys, what do we think?
Wow. I'm going to go... We usually jump straight to our final thoughts of it, but I'm going to start with... I really, really, really love this film.
Okay.
I was absolutely blown away.
Yeah.
We were going into the cinema for our first film of the year, and I don't think... I've had to limit my expectations to not have that factor of what we do. We all go in like, Sin City 2, it's been years, and it just shits all over us. I went in today with just a little bit more... realism, and just be careful, Mark. You don't want this to shit all over you. And luckily for me, I didn't get I didn't get shit over today.
Shit cast.
I'm happy.
I'm just laughing because I remember 2 days ago turning around to me saying, I think Birdman's going to be the best film I've ever seen. So clearly his expectations weren't lowered that much.
In fact, in the last couple of days, I've just controlled myself and gone, look, you don't want to be disappointed. Just go in there, just lower them a bit, and it met them. I was blown away. Okay. And for me, it was... awesome.
Well, it's interesting that you should say that, actually. Usually, more often than not, when we review a film, we tend to agree, because we have quite similar tastes. So for once, it's nice to say that I disagree with you entirely.
Cool.
Didn't like it. Didn't like it at all. I thought it was overly arty and incredibly pretentious. I thought the acting was uniformly excellent, and we'll come to that a bit later on, but I thought the film was... I don't know what it was.
Adam, please be on the fence in the middle right now, and we can use the podcast next 20 minutes to get you one side or the other.
No, I'm actually on the in the camp of... I enjoyed it. I thought it was good.
Yeah.
One of the comments I was actually going to make before you spoke was, one thing I will say is this film is not for everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
This is not a film that you'll go into, and you will feel strongly either way. You don't go and see it if you're just... casually out on a Thursday.
Yeah.
There are other films out there, Hollywood blockbusters of you. And this film kind of makes the point of that as well. How partially you have the cultural side of film and then you've got the blockbuster side of film. It's as if it's kind of talking about a cultural ghetto in a way. But I'm on the side of I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very good. And as you mentioned, the acting was universally brilliant.
Yeah.
Before we get into the usual Skip to the End way of talking about each actor and performances... The first thing I wanted to say was...
To Skip to the End review now.
Yeah. I want to say how original it was, and the fact of I've not seen another film in the cinema like that in my life. I've not gone and seen something filmed that way. I know the whole...
Film through one shot was absolutely
made
awesome.
Out to be one shot. And that was really, really well done.
It was edited brilliantly to make it appear as though it was one long... 2 hour shot, which obviously it wasn't, it was just edited. And sorry to spoil chatty. Whoever, you know, the guys, I think there's a couple of chaps who edited it who are undoubtedly going to be nominated for an Oscar and should win because it's a real high wire act.
It doesn't even feel like there's a break in the film.
Yeah, it's brilliantly done. You know, there are a lot of things about the film to love. The direction by Iñárritu and the editing and so on, fantastic. It's just the story did nothing for me.
That's fair enough. I can see that point of view. Personally, I liked the story. I thought it was interesting. And one of the things that was very interesting for me was how he played this, I think he said in the 90s, comic book character called Birdman, in superhero on film. And there's constant references to things like Avengers and Iron Man and stuff. So it's as if he played it before the boom. And now he's kind of annoyed about the fact these guys are all getting the admiration and adulation.
Yeah.
And there's that underlying current to it.
And there's a lot of, you know, life imitating art there, because obviously Michael Keaton was
Batman.
Was Batman on the big screen, and his, you know, I wouldn't say his career's hit the skids or anything, he's still working constantly, but he's not a big A-list star like he was back in his Batman and Beetlejuice days.
This will put him back up there.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely going to get nominated for the Oscar. He's got a fair shot at winning. He is brilliant in it, so he fully deserves that. And I'm glad that it's putting him back on the map, because he's one of those guys that I've always liked. He's always really charming. Like, Beetlejuice is a superb film. He was a damn good Batman as well.
He was, yeah. He was good Batman. I used to have a film on VHS, would you believe, when I was a kid. He did it. It was called Jack Frost.
Yeah. Remember that?
He played a dad who died in a car accident and then came back to life as a snowman.
Pretty dark, that.
Yeah.
And it was honestly one of the worst pieces of trash I'd ever seen. but his acting is flawless in this.
That's the thing. He's one of those that he did a lot of shit films over the years, as most actors do at some point. But he's always good in them. Like, yeah. Do you remember, was it Multiplicity, the one that was, he made like copies of himself?
Oh God, yeah.
It's a terrible film, but he's really funny in it, yeah.
It is quite ironic that the film is about someone relaunching their career and getting back in the limelight, and we are going to see in a month's time his name plastered on the front of the papers that we've got. Mm-hmm. It is going to be, he's going to be the Matthew McConaughey of last year that suddenly everyone's talking about. He'll be up for it. I'm sure he'll be in massive deals. We'll see him a lot more now.
Yeah.
You said that he's a massive working actor still, but I can't think of a film he's been in a few years. Well,
He was in The Other Guys. He played the police captain in The Other Guys, and he's
really
funny.
He was in The Other Guys. Did anyone see that film?
Yeah, me, several times. Oh. Will Ferrell, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, sorry. I forgot.
I think the interesting thing about this, and we'll talk about our Oscar predictions later, but the idea that he is going to get nominated, and looking at the actors that are being banded around at the minute, a lot of them are from a similar vein. They haven't really been in anything big up until now.
Yeah, like Eddie Redmayne is, you know, one of the front runners. He's pretty much come out of nowhere. He's not had any big leading roles. Benedict Cumberbatch is a very popular guy and been in some big movies, but he's not.
Again, come out of left field again. So it's interesting to look at it that. And Michael Keaton's probably arguably the most experienced name on there.
Mm.
Yeah, definitely.
But again, he's flawless performance from him.
Yeah, it is. It is a great performance. I thought the acting across the board was really good. Edward Norton, as his co-star in the play, Mike, I thought he was spectacular.
He was brilliant as well. And one of the interesting things about it is, I've heard that Edward Norton is notoriously difficult to work with.
Yeah.
Anyway, and in the film, his person, Mike Shiner, is notoriously hard to work with as well. So I wonder again if that's... Had they just put a camera on these people and said, just do what you normally do?
Yeah, just be you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, he hasn't really been in the massive limelight for quite a few years.
Do you know what? And I think that's due to what Adam's just said.
Yeah.
I think a lot of studios and directors, you know, I'm going to say allegedly here because I don't need to sue me.
No.
A lot of the studios
he's on
and directors...
Well.
Is he? They don't want to work with him, or a bit resistant to work with him, because of, you know, he's known for
taking over the show.
If
he's got this reputation. I mean, I remember, I think it might have been Incredible Hulk or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember apparently he got the script, signed on for the role, and then sent them 10 or 12 pages of rewrites that he wanted for his character to have parts added in.
Yeah.
I mean, that's true, then you can see why a studio like Marvel wouldn't want to work with him again.
Exactly. I think it was the director of American History X, whose name escapes me. He hates him. I read like an interview on him or a profile on him a few years back, and he absolutely hates Edward Norton because of the experience they had making that film. By all accounts, he is a dick.
The thing is, it was really refreshing and nice to see him again on screen. Mm. And like you said,
great.
I always have this thing where I talk on the podcast and then I'll go back and listen back and I think, actually, I didn't mean to get so excited because it's just been recorded, it's still in my mind. But I'm gladly... Yeah, I'll go out and say that my favourite performance from him was American History X. I thought for his one of his earlier films, it's so powerful. But then this is up there. This is... Mm. Really, really good acting, and I'm sure maybe we'll find, you know, like we said, we're going to talk about the Oscars. But if he gets nominated for Best Supporting Actor, I'll happily put my money on him right now. Yeah. I can't see many performances that were better. He really was up there.
He was excellent. I mean, we haven't seen Whiplash yet. There's a lot of talk that J.K. Simmons is basically the front runner by a mile. That remains to be seen once we've seen it. But I think he's a lock for a nomination.
Norman, yeah, definitely.
So, and he is fantastic. It's great acting. He's really funny in it as well, because he's a real sort of smug dick of an actor in the film. Yeah, I really enjoyed his work. Emma Stone was really good in it as well, as Regan's daughter, Sam.
Yeah, it's odd, because the film's so focused on Regan Thompson, Michael Keaton is very much the central focus. So it's more like we're watching this one long shot and people are just kind of popping in every now and then and leaving again.
Yeah.
And I didn't really think Sam had a lot to do in the film, but what she did very well.
Mm-hmm. There's one particular scene where she sort of has a rant at him about how
it's all on her face.
You know, but the reason for him to putting on this play is just because he's looking for love and he means he's worthless like everyone
he
else.
He wants to be relevant. I think that's the phrase she uses, isn't it?
And as you say, the camera's right in her face. There's a lot of really tight close-up shots in this film, and it's just this diatribe she goes on for sort of 2 or 3 minutes, and she's fantastic. Yeah. So yeah, I thought she did good work. She could pop up with a nomination, you never know.
My only concern with Emma Stone, and this is, she just looks a bit unhealthy right now. She looks too skinny,
I think that was for the film. You've got to remember, she was playing someone who's just out of rehab.
No, of course, but I don't know, it just... That isn't the girl from Easy A, or...
She's playing someone who's just come out of rehab.
No, and that's fine, and fair play to the dedication, but I do worry now when I've seen her recently at premieres for this film and stuff. She just doesn't look well.
No, because her face is sort of shrunken a bit because she's so thin, but her eyes are massive.
Yeah.
It's like a salamander or something.
Yeah. But I mean, there was a scene when
she's... and tell her not to come down next.
Yeah, when she's looking out the window, towards the end, her eyes are fucking huge.
They're massive, aren't they?
But, really good performance from her, and it'd be interesting if she does get an Oscar nod.
What do you think of Zach Galifianakis as Jake? Because I know that you usually usually refer to him as that fat twat, don't you?
I was going to say, I call him the fat twat from The Hangover. He's not so much of a fat twat now.
He's lost quite a bit of weight.
Hell of a lot of weight. Yeah.
Still a twat, though.
Do you know what? I've got to give him his credit. He was really good.
I thought he was really... I love Zach Galifianakis.
It was quite nice
to
not see him being that stupid douche as well,
I've always been a bit on the fence with Zach Galifianakis. I hated him in The Hangover, but then I hate The Hangover, really, as a set of films.
Fair enough.
When I have seen him in other things, I've not been as annoyed. But in this, I thought he was very good. And he clearly is a good actor.
Yeah.
It's just when you choose bald scripts like The Hangover... you're not going to come across that way.
And I think that's the thing, because he's a stand-up comedian by trade... His acting career started out by being in a lot of shit comedies. Yeah. That's always the way with stand-up. So it's nice that he's getting to sort of flex his acting muscle a little bit more in better roles now.
I'd like to now see him not do stuff like Due Date 2 and do some actual more serious roles. And like you said, I'll give him his credit. Today I thought he was fantastic, and it was just nice to see him be sensible.
He can't really knock The Hangover. It's got him where he was. I mean, he's only the big name because of those films.
Absolutely,
being in those films has got him roles like this as well, so which allows him to show his acting talent. Mm-hmm. So, fair play to him.
I thought the film was really well directed, not just the sort of continual seeming one shot that the film was, apparently done in. I just thought the composition and the framing was great. I think because a lot of it takes place in a small theatre, a lot of the scenes are shot in cramped hallways or cramped dressing rooms, and I thought the camera work was brilliant.
Oh, spot on.
That's the one thing about the film. I know at the end you're going to probably not rate it as high as I thought you would, and you've come out probably not quite, probably a bit like, it wasn't Birdman. But I didn't want to blink through that film, and there wasn't anything major that happened. When you think it's just the story of this guy, there was little bits that are talking, but it wasn't like explosions or anything. And I felt to the point where, even like you said, they're just following him down a hallway. I was always thinking, who's going to pop out? What's he going to do next? Where's he going to look? And the way it was filmed, I actually felt I felt I was getting in his head.
There's a few moments as well, which is really odd. They just literally, the camera will follow someone and they'll go into a door and it'll just stay on a hall for about a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And then what that is it's kind of a transition of time, because then it's later on in the day.
Yeah. So
I think there's one shot where it just looks up into the sky. Night changes to day and it comes back down again.
But it's beautiful.
Some really good stuff in there.
And that's the thing with it, because I didn't much care for the story, I found my attention starting to wane a little bit towards the end. But the thing that regained my attention was that I started watching the film sort of academically. I was looking at it artistically and looking at, you know, where the edits would have been and how they've done this and how they've done that. So to look at it from an academic point of view, I thought it was brilliant, frankly. I just didn't much care for the story. You know, we'll get to the ratings in a bit, but my rating's not going to be that bad because I think there's a lot to recommend. It's just the story didn't grab
me. It's very similar to when... not very similar. When we came out of Interstellar, we reviewed that, and I think we looked at it, and from your perspective, I guess, because you can't rate it below a certain level because there's so many other things that are good in it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the narrative and the story are quite key to a film.
Generally, yeah.
A performance I wanted to kind of mention was Naomi Watts.
Mm.
So I always think of her as a very serious actress, a bit like... what's the girl from Bend It Like Beckham that we don't like?
Keira Knightley.
But she's always in quite serious roles. You don't see her doing dick and fart jokes or anything like that. She's not going to be in those sort of movies. She's a very serious actress.
Not if you're not looking at
dick
the right movies.
Dick and fart jokes! You just watched St. Vincent, didn't you? She's in that as the Russian prostitute. She's quite good in that.
And that's what I was going to come to. And I've seen St. Vincent and now Birdman. And it's literally really nice to see how versatile her acting is.
Yeah.
And to see her today... was unreal. That's not the same person from King Kong. That was a really decent performance.
She was good. Here's a question for you. There is a scene in the film, you know, as per usual, spoilers ahead. There's a scene in the film where Naomi Watts' character Leslie and Andrea Riseborough's character Laura have a very brief lesbian kiss.
Yeah.
There was no build-up towards it. Just happened.
It
wasn't referenced again in the rest of the film. What the fuck was that about?
It was just to make me twitch. And that was it. just to remind you still got a dick.
I didn't understand that at all.
No.
I honestly didn't. It was pointless. I don't know what it was there for, other than titillation.
Did you not like it?
I bloody loved it.
It was my favourite part of the film.
Yeah.
That's what it means by when I looked at it from an artistic point of view.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It was just to throw it in there, wasn't it?
It just
I think
happened.
The director was a bit horny. Like, you two kiss, why? Just do it. You're getting paid, do what I say.
Maybe that actually accidentally made it in. Maybe he was just filming that, getting them to do another film.
Perhaps they're lovers in real life.
Yeah, maybe.
And they're like, oh, can you give us a kiss goodbye?
Well, fair play to them if they are.
We wish you the best. Send your wedding invitation to skip the end. But yeah. Who else should we talk about? We talked about Edward Norton. We thought he was great. Everyone was great in this film. There wasn't a bad performance.
That is the thing. It's pretty much an ensemble cast. Obviously, Keaton's the lead, but then there's a large ensemble behind him, and they're all very, very good.
I just think they're all bit part players for me, because it's such a huge focus on Regan Thompson, Michael Keaton. As I mentioned, everyone just kind of pops in here and then. So none of the other supporting cast really have a lot to do.
Yeah, it's hard for them to make an impact with how little screen time they have, which is why I think it's a testament to how good the actors are, in that they are still memorable.
Exactly.
With not a lot to do.
I'd probably say behind Regan, Mike Shiner, Edward Norton's probably the person who gets the most screen time after that.
And he was outstanding, as
he's
we said.
Yeah. So let's talk briefly about the music. The whole score of it is basically like a jazz drum beat that seems to go on through the whole thing. It's very cool, isn't it? And then there's a couple of scenes where, you know, you'll be winding down an alley or down a street and you'll see a jazz drummer playing the beat a couple of times. And
I think towards the kind of final scene in the play, as he's kind of walking through the halls, he looks into a room and it's like a kitchen, isn't it?
Yeah.
The drummer's set up playing.
Yeah.
I love that. That was quite quirky and it really tied in nicely. And I think one of them was a busker on the side of the street just hitting his hi-hat at the same time. And I was like... I don't know, I felt that it really worked. If you told me at the start of this film, the sound you're going to hear throughout this film is literally a snare drum, a kick drum and a hi-hat, I'd be like, this is going to be boring. How is this going to work? But the way that the beat was always building up faster, I mean, it's weird because Whiplash is going to be a lot like this, I reckon, with a lot of the drums, but it was original, and I felt that they built up the kind of, you know, the faster drum beat on the snare really was like a heartbeat at times, and really building up the tension. And sometimes you think, well, actually, it is just that minimalistic sound that makes such a big impact, and maybe they should... look at more films like that instead of just throwing every band over it and everything. It's nice.
I think a lot of people pay attention to soundtracks. I mean, people who go
not enough,
who go and see films like Birdman because they're into film, they're into cinema, do pay attention to soundtracks, and that's why they've done such a great job with this. But if you went to, let's say, The Hobbit 3 or whatever, I can't imagine there's many people sitting in there watching that film going, oh, the score is unbelievable.
No. Truth be told, it's not something I ever used to consider until we started recording this podcast, and it became something that we talked about for each film. I'd never used to pay attention, but now I find myself actively listening out for that sort of stuff. And like you just alluded to then, Mark, with the drumming, it would sort of build to a crescendo at points.
Yeah.
And certain times, you know, the hit of one of the drums would coincide with one of the characters punching a wall or slamming a door and stuff. And I just thought the marriage of the score with the film was perfect. So yeah, the score was great. All the technical stuff, you know, we've alluded to the editing, the cinematography, the direction. Can't fault the film on the technical side.
One of the things for me about the film was the allusions to telekinesis.
Yeah.
That never really built to anything.
Yeah.
There's moments where he's just moving things or switching things off by looking at them. But that never really gets explored at all.
And does anyone else know he does it? Because whenever he does it, no one's around. So he's not like his daughter goes, "Oh, wow, how did you remove that picture?" You know, he just does it. Like he is a superhero.
Maybe that was one of the powers that Birdman had. And that's because, you know, throughout the film, he has the voice of Birdman talking to him in his head. Yeah. So I think that maybe that's what it is. And as you say, he is going a bit mental. Yeah. Obviously, I don't think it's a real power that he has. Because one of the scenes, I think, that kind of proves that he doesn't really have telekinetic powers is, you know, the bit where he's trashing his dressing room and he's using his powers to make stuff crash and bang. When his manager, Jake,
that's not there comes anymore. In... He's actually holding stuff, isn't
he? You see him pulling stuff with his hands. Yeah, so I think it's in his mind. And I think it must have just been one of the things that Birdman could do. Yeah. But it is odd.
One thing I was also going to say was... I don't know if it was just the way the trailer kind of portrayed the film, but I expected to see a lot more of the Birdman character himself in the suit. And it was only about an hour in that we first saw this suit, and then towards the end it's following him down the street and then you see it. But I reckon there's probably no more than 5 minutes of seeing that Birdman in the film. And I expected to see loads of it. I don't know, I wasn't expecting him to be like Kick-Ass and always getting in his costume and being it. But
I think the Birdman character actually only probably really appears for about 3 scenes.
Yeah.
So I expected to see a lot more. I don't know why, but it looked cool.
Yeah,
when it was flying after him, it looked awesome.
Yeah.
And when he jumped off the building and flew, that looked all great.
It's weird, because it's actually like in his mind, when it's telling him to sign on for, you know, what was it, Birdman 4 or whatever, you know, Rise of the Phoenix and stuff like that. And then this whole action sequence starts with this missile flying everywhere. Mm-hmm.
That was unreal.
And this giant robotic bird, this Birdman's fighting against. Yeah. And I sat there thinking, if they made this, I'd watch it.
I was thinking the same. I was thinking, you know, Inarritu could nail a Marvel film if he ever wanted to get that.
It was quite fun in that one scene looked better than anything Michael Bay could do. That massive robot coming over the... I was like, wow.
I've had shits that are better than anything Michael Bay could do.
Cool. Next week on the show, Ben shits. Next week we're going to interview one of Ben's shits, The Life and Times. I think we can go to the ratings.
Let's go to the ratings.
Yeah, go on then. So, we'll kick off with myself.
Yeah.
As I say, I really enjoyed the film. I thought the acting was phenomenal all round. Editing, brilliant. Technical categories we've already spoken about, fantastic. So, skip to the end.
Adam, skip to the end. Not you, not the whole lot.
8.
Okay. Similarly, all the technical stuff I thought was fantastic. The acting was brilliant. Keaton's great. There's a lot of just sort of non sequiturs and things that go nowhere, and the story didn't really grab me. So for that, I'm going to give it 7 out of 10.
I loved it. It was everything you both said. Mostly you, Adam. I loved the editing. I sat there thinking, how the hell are they pulling all this off? It's just original. It just felt like nothing else. I don't think we're going to go to the cinema and have so many talking points about a movie. I'm going to go all out and give it a 9.
Cool.
So 9, 8, 7, you're bang in the middle, isn't it?
Yeah, 8 out of 10 for skip to the end.
I love that. Absolutely. We never can argue. Yeah,
so fun. Earlier when I said skip to the end, rating 8, that's right.
You're bang on the money. And a potential front runner for your best film of 2015 then, Mark. First day of the year.
It's going to take a lot.
Out of 10.
Yeah. I'm not going to give it a 10, that'd be ridiculous.
Mm.
But, I don't see anything. Good luck. I mean, what have we got? Foxcatcher next episode?
We've got Foxcatcher, we've got Whiplash. Later on in the year, we've got Tusk. Age of Ultron. not so much Tusk. There's a lot of good movies coming out this year.
Star Wars.
Yeah.
It's going to be exciting, but Mad Max. But yeah, bang on the money. Brilliant. Well done.
So last week I set a task for us all. I kind of got inspired by, I guess, the Christmas side of things and how we all end up a little bit worse for wear. And I just figured, what kind of films do you watch when you're hungover? Because I have a set 3 or 4 which, whenever I'm hungover, I just stick on, lie down, and there I am, that's me. So who wants to start?
I'll go first if you want. Mm-hmm. I had to set myself a few little kind of, boundaries, something there to keep me in place here. What makes it a... Yeah, exactly. What makes a hangover film, really? So my rules were, I didn't want anything loud, because action's a no-go for me, because I don't want to be sitting there going, with a headache. I didn't want much gore. And as she said, length isn't an issue. So the longer I want in bed is the better. So that was my kind of rules for setting this up. Because you could pick any film and justify it, but I think it's something.
Fair enough.
Taking all that into consideration, my first choice is Rocky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I just...
First
no action in that.
Rocky 1.
Yeah.
But it's not... It's
It's not like Transformers, big robots.
Exactly.
Loud noises, no. Yeah. It's cool. It's long as well.
Yeah.
So you can literally just lie down and you have to get up to change the disc.
It's long, so you just lie down and get watched. Yeah. But yeah, I felt it was just that film where you can switch off, but you are still entertained. There's not really a storyline. It's a guy that becomes a boxer. But it's just the fact of, I can just lie there feeling like death and watching this guy become a very good champion. No spoilers.
Just ruin Rocky for all the no people who haven't seen it.
But yeah, I don't really need to say much more. Rocky's my first choice.
All right then. I think pretty much my go-to when I'm hungover is I like to keep drinking when I'm hungover. So I like to watch films that reflect that, sort of party films. So my go-to when I'm hungover is always old school.
Nice.
I just love to watch those guys and their frat boy antics, drinking and partying and stuff. And that just makes me feel better when I'm lying there. Very, very worse for wear. So that's my first choice, and it's a great film. And, you know, I don't need to repeat my love of Will Ferrell and his movies.
I didn't know you liked it.
Yeah, pretty good, yeah.
My third choice, I guess, or number three, is 10 Things I Hate About You.
What? Are you a teenage girl?
It's just...
I wish you was.
It's just so easy to watch. You can just lie back, and I just find it funny. It's been one of those
films. It's a good film. I really like
that. You realise he's not playing the Joker in that, don't you?
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Heath Ledger, he is in The Dark Knight, which is one of my favourite films of all time. So now let's just spend this segment talking about The Dark Knight, shall we?
Not again.
Set on the Taming of the Shrew, I believe, that storyline.
Anyway, to set us up for the rewatch...
No, that's a good film. I like that film.
I must admit, I've never seen it. Because I'm not a teenage girl, I've never been inclined to see it.
It's good. It's genuinely really good.
I'll take your word for it.
No, it is. It's a funny
Robin's
film.
In it.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt, isn't it?
Is he? Is it the whole cast of Dark? Is it like a prequel?
I believe it is, actually.
It's a really good film.
It's a fun film, and it's so easy to watch as well. Literally, lie back, hungover, boom.
The two sisters in it are really fit as well. The one that's in Save the Last Dance, who's now does nothing. So she probably did have her last dance. No, they buried her.
All right, on that note, Mark.
The last paycheck.
Number two.
Number two for me is going to be Wayne's World.
Nice.
For the fact of, again, it's just a stupid, silly film where I've not got to think about anything. I really, really like Mike Myers in that film. I think his finest piece of work, because after that he did stuff like, what's that one he did with?
Love Guru.
Yeah, that's the one. What was that
terrible,
one about?
Horrible.
Austin Powers at 11 and stuff. It was just absolutely horrendous. But in Wayne's World, that was his peak. He could be entertaining for that whole film.
Mm-hmm.
Garth as well, let's be honest about it, unbelievable. What a great, silly little story, and they do not make films like that anymore. It's a classic.
Yeah, I need to rewatch that. I want to watch that and Wayne's World 2, actually.
It's a good sequel, but I just want to lie there, feel like death, you know, think about, oh my God.
And just laugh.
Yeah.
That's
it. Not even out loud, just in your head.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's my number two choice.
Okay. My number two, this one is a film that I absolutely love, but it's more by circumstance I'll end up watching it. It seems to be, it's one of those where if I've been out on Saturday night, I'm hungover on Sunday and I'm flicking around the TV, it's always on ITV2, every Sunday afternoon, Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
And no matter how many times I've seen it, and no matter how far into the film it is when I turn to it, I will watch the whole damn thing, because it's a work of art. Bill Murray's the king. Probably his best performance, maybe Ghostbusters, that's another topic for another day. But he's superb in that. The film's great. Andy McDowell can't act, sadly, so she brings it down a little bit. But the rest of the film is so good and so funny, and I must have seen it 20 times. It's amazing.
It's my dad's favourite film of all time as well.
Superb film.
It's a great film, absolutely. And Bill Murray is an absolute genius.
He is.
And Bill Murray actually appears in my number two film.
Oh, yeah.
Kingpin.
Amazing.
It's the only Farrelly Brothers film I've never seen.
I love Kingpin, and it is the perfect film to watch when you are hungover, because it's got that right balance between hideousness and comedy, and like the Faraday brothers are pretty much known for.
Yeah.
But Woody Harrelson plays the main character, Roy Munson, and Bill Murray plays his bowling rival, Ernie McCracken. But there's also Randy Quaid, who plays an Amish man named Ishmael, who's a really good bowler. And it's just one of these films where you can just sit back again and watch it, and you don't have to think about it, and you're just laughing in your head.
Didn't you watch this film like 3 times last week?
I was very drunk last
week. You did tell me, I watched it again. And I was like, what did you do last night? He's like, I got home and I watched Kingpin again. It's
brilliant.
So, yeah.
It's just one of those films for you. And Bill Murray, he's in at the start, and then he kind of disappears for the middle, and then he's back in it towards the end again. Mm-hmm. And he's just, Bill Murray has, steal a line from, I think, Zombieland it is. He has a direct line to my funny bone.
Yeah. Yeah. He is just an innately funny man.
Right, so my number one choice is Road Trip.
Okay.
It's the fact of whatever I had done the night before, if I'm lying there feeling bad, they do it worse. The story and the characters and what they get up to.
Yeah.
For me, I prefer Stifler in that film than when he's in American Pie. He is still Stifler. I don't care if he's called something else.
I did say, he's Stifler in every
film he's ever been in.
Sean William Scott was
in No, he's Stifler. I like him in that film. There's a lot of funny one-liners. I love it when the car first crashes over the bridge and he gets out and goes, how long do you give it until our first ass raping? And that's one of those lines on the top. That's hilarious. But Tom Green, I'm not a big fan of at times. Yeah. I believe that's one of the films where I can pull up with him throughout the film.
Yeah.
I don't like him in some stuff. Freddy Got Fingered is too much Tom Green. It's too much of him.
Danny, would you like some sausage?
Yeah, it's funny, but I'm like, go away. You're doing my head in, you know.
Mental.
I just like the short bits of him in Road Trip, and I don't know, it's just a really good little film. I like it.
I'll tell you something that just paints me in a bad light about that film. Sean William Scott, sorry, Stifler, he, in that film, wears like a button-down shirt and Adidas track pants. And at the time of seeing that film, I was like, that's a pretty sweet look. So I started wearing that. I think I was at uni at the time, so I started knocking around in Adidas sweatpants and a button-down shirt because Stifler made me.
How did that work out for you?
Yeah, the ladies love it.
Did they though?
No, not so much.
Should we watch Black Swan next week and see if he turns up to the cast in a little teepee? Like,
hello, lads. Teepee?
Say teepee.
Yeah, dipshit.
That's Mark's weekly fuck up.
Teepee.
Right then.
Right, Ben. Number one.
Oh, right. Teepee. Talking about silly, stupid films that you don't have to really plug your brain in for. One of my favourite hangover films is Billy Madison.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Which is an absolutely garbage, atrocious Adam Sandler film, as opposed to all the brilliant ones, obviously.
Yeah, I was going to say, as opposed to his back catalogue of genius.
But it's just so stupid. And, you know, he's always a div in his films, but this one he's supposed to be, because he's supposed to be a thick idiot who never graduated high school. So his dad says, in order for you to take over my big, you know, multinational company, you need to go and graduate every year through high school and whatnot, and he has a few weeks to do it. And it's so stupid, but so funny, especially when you're hungover and, you know, your brain's not fully working. Billy Madison, love that film, but only when I'm hungover. If I watched it sober, I'd hate it so much.
I think it's pretty shit, both, in my opinion. I don't like it. It's annoying.
One of the things about a hangover film is not everyone has to agree with
you. No, it's a... Yeah, I can say anything right now. Schindler's List, why? Because when I'm hungover... Yeah, I like to
Unbelievable.
See...
Don't finish that. I'm not...
I mean, Mark spoke about his kind of rules at the start of it, where it can't be anything too gory, no action, things like that. But my number one, and I actually briefly mentioned it during number two, Zombieland.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah.
I love watching this.
I thought you'd say Shaun the Dead.
Especially when I'm hungover, I love watching this film. And it must be something about Bill Murray and Woody Harrelson.
Yeah.
So when I'm hungover, I just
He's done well. He's in
a comforting presence.
Yeah.
You know. But no, I absolutely love Zombieland. It's one of my, probably one of my top films from time to time.
It's amazing. It's a great film. The opening sequence, unbelievable, the credits.
Yeah. But it's one of those films for me where I even like Jesse Eisenberg in it.
I think Jesse Eisenberg's great in it. Emma Stone's brilliant in it.
Yeah.
Harrelson's always brilliant.
And he's girl from Little Miss Sunshine, I thought she's pretty cool.
Can't remember her name, but maybe.
The four main members of cast are all
when they're setting up brilliant. The Lost Ring, I love that. That's unbelievable. You know, she comes out into the car park. It's such a genius idea.
Yeah. And the Bill Murray cameo is probably my favourite cameo of any film.
Yeah, oh, it's absolutely brilliant. I love the fact that he talks about playing golf, which is actually a common thing for him.
Yeah.
He brings his love of golf into quite a few different films. Yes. But it's a Bill Murray cameo, Woody Harrelson. I think these two actors right there are people that just help anyone get through a hangover.
Yeah.
We've gone to the Social Network again, which is, for Twitter, it's at
Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah. At STTE Podcast, and then obviously Facebook, which is facebook.com/skip to the end.
Did we get any via email?
We haven't, but if you do want to do that, visit 1994. Boost the email.
Sign up for a Hotmail
skip
account.
skip@icloud.com. But we've got Ryan Kenchu with Back to the Future, Dogma, and Stripes.
Back to the Future is another one of those films that occasionally just turns up on ITV2.
What do you mean occasionally?
It's on every week.
Yeah. Oh, did you see? I watched it the other day, actually. And did you see? You know when they go forward into the future in Back to the Future 2? The date that they arrive is October 21st, 2015.
Yeah.
So we're only 10 months away from the future.
Finally, we'll get those pictures online.
Jackets not just you have to buy
and dry themselves as well. Amazing. Yeah, it's happening.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
We've had new people again sign up, so thank you. So Michelle Martin with Titanic, Armageddon and King Arthur. The reason is the longer film, the better.
No, I agree with that. I think with hangover films sometimes, if you have a 3-hour film, you can even drift in and out of it.
Yeah, to be fair, this is why generally when I'm hungover, I watch more TV than film, because I like to just put on a box set and just blast through it. Something like The Office.
Forget it, we'll just do a TV cast.
Just do a TV cast, forget it.
We have Netley Downs with Forrest Gump, Home Alone 2 and Zulu.
Zulu
is about 8 hours long, that's why. We've got Becky Nook with Shaun the Dead, Crazy Stupid Love and Good Will Hunting.
I wouldn't want to watch Good Will Hunting. Especially now that what happened to Robin Williams in real life. I don't want to watch that.
So The Green Mile.
Kev Horton with Pump Up the Volume, The Crow.
Great film.
Amazing. Elizabeth Town. I like that film. And we've had one come through on Twitter, which is 365 Flicks, and they've put Twister, as it's always on ITV2 most Sundays.
Yeah.
Good point. Fanboys, because Star Wars is too much when you're hungover, but this is a good Star Wars themed film.
I like film, that film as well.
It's got a good logic to it. Mm-hmm.
And Breakfast Club, just because.
Well, that's fair enough.
You've justified it.
So that was our top three hangover movies. Right, lads, for the next episode of the podcast, I've had an idea. I want to go into the genres now, and there's a particular genre of film that I'm a big, big fan of. I love anything that has anything to do with time travel.
Okay.
So I want us to talk about our top three time travel movies. So let's not just have Back to the Future 1, 2 and 3. Let's put a bit more thought into it. So are we up for that?
Are we doing this on episode 8?
Genius. Yeah, hilarious.
I'm just surprised that during the Hangover film, no one picked Beverly Hills Chihuahua 2.
Oh, that's a good point, yeah. It is my favourite.
But no, challenge accepted, time travel movies.
Yup.
We've just finished watching Westworld, which was my choice for the new feature on this podcast, which is The Rewatch. This is a film me and Ben have seen, but Adam, this is the first time you've seen this film, so I'm going to throw it straight over to you. How did you find it?
Well, maybe you should just talk about the film a bit first and explain what it is to people that might not have seen it.
Fuck them. No. It's a 1970s film featuring an amusement park that's basically malfunctions and goes terribly wrong.
Yeah, it's a Western themed theme park. There's also like a medieval world and a Roman world, but the main focus of this is the Western themed world, and it's manned by robots. Mm-hmm. They're programmed not to hurt humans, and
the guns
won't fire off at anything that has a heat signature, so that you can shoot at the robots because they're cold. You can't shoot at humans because they're warm blooded, etc. And it's about how that goes awry. And if you think the idea of a theme park going awry sounds familiar, cough, cough, Jurassic Park, it's because both of them were written by Michael Crichton. So he basically just ripped off himself 20 years later.
Well, I think you can rip off yourself.
You can.
Yep.
I think if it's your idea originally, you're allowed to do it again. There's certain other films that have used killer robots that seem unstoppable and hell-bent on terminating.
Yes.
Other people. What films are you referring to that terminate?
I don't know. Just let's terminate this conversation.
Terrible. So, yeah. The rules are with this that two people have got to have seen this film. Adam, this is your first viewing of this film. Truthfully, did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah, that's good.
There was lots of aspects of it that when you watch it and you realise that it was made before a lot of other films you've seen, you're like, oh yeah. Like, I think I briefly mentioned throughout, during the film that, oh, it's like Itchy and Scratchy Land on The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Clearly where they took the inspiration Absolutely, from for that yeah. episode.
And that's funny because I guess you've seen that episode of The Simpsons a decade ago, probably many times since,
yeah.
and never knew what the inspiration was, and now you do.
And now I do. And it's a really, really cool film to watch as well. It's something I'd never really see. I mean, you mentioned Theme Park Goes Awry, yeah, but it's not the same as Jurassic
Park. No, it's not, no.
So it was really cool as a first watch. Right? That's something I'd never really seen before.
I like the concept and the idea and the kind of the story. It is really
I like the at camp the time, villain.
Yeah, but the originality of that actually, you know, £1,000 you can go to this place
dollars.
On sorry, $1,000 yeah, per day, and actually have that experience. And I don't know, considering that's 40 years old, that movie, I think it's a really good idea and really yeah. well shot. And
well, it's, when you said that to me earlier during the film, you know, this is 40 years old, and I did a bit of mental math thinking that you were completely wrong, and you weren't. It's 42 years old nearly, which is mental.
Yeah.
And it still looks brilliant. I mean, some of the effects they're using here are absolutely, the blood looks a bit
The blood was too
red. Red paint.
Yeah, it did, yeah.
But the actual, like, there's a bit where they've got one of the robots on the table. It's actually the main one who you're worried about. And the scientist kind of leans over and cuts himself off and so cuts the picture off from the camera as he goes back. They've clearly replaced it with a model. But he just kind of takes the face off. And it does look quite good when you think that's 1970s. I mean, if you look at something like The Terminator, when Arnie's cutting his eye out, that doesn't look half as good as that did.
Yeah, and that's
sort of 10 years later.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are films 10, 20 years later with worse prosthetics and special effects than that. And one of the ones that we pointed to towards the end, the character you're referring to there is the gunslinger played by Yul Brynner, who's the sort of main antagonist, the robot that goes mental and starts killing people. And there's a bit at the end where the hero throws acid in his face, and then there's all this sort of bubbling up on his face, and I think it was you, Adam, that commented how good that looked.
Yeah.
And I read something earlier today, actually, because I was doing a bit of research about the film, that what they did there is they put sort of a sheen on his face. I think it was like a vinyl or something. Into the mixture, they put Alka-Seltzer. So what he did was throw water in his face, and then effervesced, and so it looked like his face was burning.
That's cool.
That's quite a good little trick.
And I think this is one of the interesting things for me, because with the heavy reliance on CGI nowadays, you're no longer getting these clever solutions.
This is it.
Clever, low-budget solutions.
Yes.
Yeah. In a Michael Bay film, that would have taken 14 weeks to animate and cost £78 million.
Yeah. Where we always say, and I know I've mentioned before, John Carpenter is massive into that, and that's the sort of, you know, things like The Thing and Halloween. It has that same sort of feel.
Got this thought of Michael Bay going, so how do we do this? Alka-Seltzer water? No.
Not big enough.
Let's hire in a big Hollywood studio.
Yeah, let's get Industrial Light and Magic on the case.
to spend 14 weeks in it. How much do they want? 90 million. Pay them.
Whatever it's worth. It looked great on camera.
I think you were saying
that. Alka-Seltzer? $1.99. Bollocks to it.
I think you were saying, Ben, that you'd seen that film when you were a kid, maybe 20 years ago.
You actually commented on the scary films.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because we did it a few podcasts ago. We did films that scared us, and I'd forgotten about this because this is a favourite of my mum's, and I watched it when I was probably about 10 or so. And Yul Brynner, the gunslinger, scared the living shit out of me. Back
and
then.
You can still see now why. I mean, watching that as a kid, you'd be terrified. This absolute crazy guy with the eyes, those silver eyeballs.
One of the things that I was really impressed about was how robotic some of the movements were.
Yeah.
Whether that was, you know, a hugely intentional thing, or maybe it was just a sign of, I don't know, being a bit of a lower budget movie, not so good actors, but some of them were, like, some of the movements they made were just really robotic. I think Yul Brynner, specifically, when he's first seen at the bar, he's very kind of
the way his head
moving,
turns,
like, robotically and jigging this whiskey back. And
but it wasn't too sort of herky jerky, looking at him trying to be a robot. Yeah. It was subtle enough that they were close to human, but just enough to realise they were slightly off.
And they keep mentioning the hands.
Wasn't really can't like quite get the hands crouch, right. Was it? It was better than that. But yeah, it was. I think the acting is really good in that film, and Yul Brynner, like we've said before, he's outstanding throughout the whole film. The moment he walks on that scene, because I'll be honest with you, when we first started watching, I was thinking, I'm not sure if Adam's going to like this because it is a bit ridiculous at the start. And you think, what is this film all about? This aircraft, and I like the way the sunglasses and you see all the scenes. That was a really cool bit of filming. But it is a bit like, what is this film all about? And it's only when he first enters that scene at the bar that you really realise. He orders that real black sort of whiskey and he's just drinking it and like, what are you saying, son? You think, God, this is the serious dude here with some kind of fear factor behind
him. I can see why they've opted to go for a TV series as well.
With the one of the Nolan brothers, isn't it?
Yeah, Jonathan Nolan's actually writing it.
But yeah, going back to the acting, the sort of the main heroes of the piece are James Brolin.
Dad. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's James Brolin, who is obviously Josh Brolin's dad, but he looks more like Christian Bale's dad in this film, yeah. And then the other main guy who ends up... Actually, I won't spoil it, but he's in it. Richard Benjamin plays the other hero, and they're both really good.
Yeah.
Like Josh Brolin, James Brolin rather, his character has already been to the resort before and he knows what to expect, whereas Richard Benjamin's character is a newbie to it and is asking them a lot of questions, and it's funny seeing how they react to it when they first go into that saloon and Brolin's like, come on, let's get involved, let's have a fight. And the other guy's like, no, I feel silly, but he soon gets into it. It's a really smart film, and you can definitely see where the basis from Jurassic Park came from.
I'm excited to see what they do as a modern version. Yeah, I mean, with one of the Nolan, do you say it's Jonathan writing? I do now worry after Interstellar and many films where he's sort of dropped the
book. You can never really tell, because with Jonathan Nolan, he's always written with other people.
Yeah.
So you don't know how much influence he's actually had on each script. So, I mean, he could have been one of the lead writers behind The Dark Knight and Batman Begins, but not had a hand so much in Interstellar.
Yeah.
Well, Interstellar was a script that had been written by some other chap who was like a scientist who knew all about wormholes and whatnot, and then it was tailored by the Nolans. Yeah. Am I wrong, or is JJ... Not the Nolan sisters.
JJ Abrams,
Is JJ involved? Yeah, I thought he might be.
It should be all right.
Well, I don't know. Lens flare.
I'll ring up tomorrow and ask.
Yeah, no word. Just pop down to Pinewood. He'll be there. One of the interesting things that I liked in that film is there's a bit where when all the robots start going mad and the scientists who work at Westworld and they're sort of trying to work out why, and one of them puts forward the theory that there's sort of a self-replicating issue within the computers, like a virus. And that, I read today that was most likely the first ever mention of a computer virus on film.
Really?
Because it was only the year before that, in 1972, that like some pioneering computer scientist had written a paper about the concept of computer viruses, and these were the first people to use that as a concept.
Diseases for computers.
They called it diseases for computers, and that's what they meant, viruses. So I love that, that was quite possibly the first usage of that.
That's awesome. Like, just to think of that concept as well. Like, I love the fact that at one point he even mentions that they're computers built by computers.
Yeah.
Which again is potentially inspiration for another film where a large self-aware computer system starts building other robots to go back in time and kill people.
All right. Okay. I just need to go to the toilet, but I'll be back.
I really think they should sue. It's never too late to sue.
I don't understand how they haven't been.
Maybe they have. We don't know. Should look into it.
Well, there's aspects of that. I mean, I suppose because the plot's different and the settings are different and things like that. But the general concept is very, very similar.
Yeah.
There were similarities.
I suppose they didn't have, in actual Terminator, it's a red eye, it should be silver.
Yeah.
But that's another story for another day. We can talk all day about plagiarism and James Cameron and other people that do.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
Allegedly plagiarising. but I really enjoyed it. It was great for me as a first watch.
Cool, and as I said, I've not seen it in a long time, so it was great to watch it again.
I haven't seen it in a few months, and it was great to read it. I only actually got to see this film for the first time earlier this year.
Mm.
So I wasn't lucky enough to watch it as a kid and have that kind of fear, but it's unbelievable. And I will revisit that film again, I reckon, in a couple of years, and especially the TV series, it'll be nice to see people...
I think a lot of people will see the film for the first time after the TV series, if it gets popular enough.
Yeah. So are we going to give it a score then, a rewatch score?
Yeah, like we did with...
Die Hard.
That's it.
That was it. And
how did you forget we watched Die Hard?
Die Hard, yeah!
that got a 9, was it?
Yeah.
It did, yeah. Despite Adam.
I'm going to go, as it's my choice, with... Yeah, I'm going to give it a 9. I absolutely love it. I think it's way before its time. I no way believe. I think they've had us. I think I was probably made 20 years ago and not 40. That can't be.
Yeah, they've lied to you.
Yeah.
Years.
They clearly went back in time and re-released it. Maybe they sent a robot back. I don't know.
Talking about time travel, next week we're all going to be discussing that. So, yeah.
All connected.
Well, I'm going to give it an 8, I think.
I
really enjoyed it. It is clearly a film that was too soon for its own time.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed it. I don't think it's good enough to be a 9 or a 10.
Yeah.
Or iconic enough to be a 9 or a 10 for me.
But so if Ben agrees, then it's...
Yeah, I agree. I say an 8, so it's an overall skip to the end score of 8. Sorry,
love our ratings. We really do have no idea what we're going to pick, and we wait till this time to record. So, Adam, it's your choice for this week's rewatch. So, what's your choice?
Well, I've been thinking, we've had a good run so far.
So you're going to ruin it?
we've had Die Hard,
yeah,
which was great fun.
Uh-huh.
We've had Westworld, which I particularly loved, as we've just spoke about. So it's time, and I often find that when we review things that are good, it can be a bit of a boring segment for the listeners. So,
yeah, so just don't bother downloading the podcast, guys.
So I want to put a bit of fun into it, and let's review something that's known to be terrible.
Okay.
So I'm going with Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace.
Okay, all right.
Brilliant.
Brilliant.
Add a bit of fun to the proceedings.
Yeah. I think we've spoken about the film before, so it would be nice to dissect it
exactly.
In more detail. And it has been a long time since I've seen it.
I love Jar Jar Binks too, so can't wait to revisit that guy.
Oh, fuck, I forgot about him.
Yeah, fantastic. So, next week, Episode 1, The Phantom Shitty Menace.
So, we're right in the middle of Oscar season at the minute, and the Oscar nominations are due to be announced on January the 15th. So, before that day, I wanted us to have a brief chat about who we think the runners and riders are for the nominations. Closer to the actual date, so probably around the 12th, 13th, something like that, the three of us are going to put up on our website, skiptotheend.co.uk, our four predictions for the top six categories. What we mean by the top six are lead actor, lead actress, supporting actor, supporting actress, best film and best director. They're, for our money, the top six. So we'll do our nominations in full a couple of days before the 15th, and then we'll run a bit of a competition to see whoever gets the most right. But prior to that, let's just have a bit of a chat about things that we've seen this year or things that we've read about that we might not yet have seen and who we think are going to be the runners and riders. So let's talk about the acting side of it first. Let's talk about the blokes in the lead category.
Okay.
I think the people to beat at the minute, it sounds like, are Eddie Redmayne in The Theory of Everything,
yeah,
which we've not yet seen, and Benedict Cumberbatch in The Imitation Game, which we have.
Yeah. I think Keaton for Birdman as well is generally being touted
yeah
up there as the lock-ins, I guess, the three ones
yeah
that are pretty much locked in mm-hmm for nominations. There is talk about David Ayolowo for Selma.
Ayolowo, yeah.
Plays Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that could be an interesting one as well.
Yeah.
Interesting battle.
Yeah, you've got Steve Carell in the mix as well for
yeah
Foxcatcher. You've got Jake Gyllenhaal for Nightcrawler. I think the top four, this may change by the time I actually do my formal predictions, but I think Cumberbatch, Redmayne, Carell and Keaton are going to be the four.
Yeah.
And then the fifth spot is going to be a shootout between Ayolowo and Gyllenhaal.
Basically.
Yeah.
Maybe Matthew McConaughey, maybe. Maybe he gets the nod for Interstellar.
I don't think he will.
We might not agree, but he might.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that I don't agree. I think he was very good in that film. It's just based on the other awards that have been given out,
yeah,
or nominations that have gone out so far, he's been basically shut out.
Yeah.
All the critics' bodies and all the other different awards that are going around, he's not had a sniff. So I can't see him breaking through into
no
the Oscars. But stranger things have happened, you know.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. But it's a difficult category this year. There's a lot of competition again, especially at the main four you mentioned. And if, you know, say David
Ayolowo
makes it in for Selma again, big political figure.
Yeah.
Martin Luther King, the Academy, they love big political figures.
How about on the female side of it then? Who do you think the runners and riders are for the lead actress?
I think, sure, would she,
this
Gone Girl, does she get the chance to, or is it supported?
She's going forward for lead,
yeah. Surely.
So Rosamund Pike, you
yeah
think, has got a good shot. Yeah, I think she should make the five.
I know a lot of people are talking about this, is it Julianne Moore's to lose?
Yeah, people are saying that Julianne Moore in Still Alice just knocks it out of the park and
yeah
is the prohibitive front runner here.
What other actresses are there for this year that have really had an impact?
It's difficult because, to be honest, there's not really been that many standout performances. And so this is what I mean when the critics are basically saying it's Julianne Moore's to lose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jennifer Aniston as well for
Cake.
Cake.
Yeah.
That's obviously been talked about. Surely as well they must pick Jennifer Lawrence for the Hunger Games movies.
I sincerely doubt it.
they never, ever.
That would be hilarious.
The Academy bloody loves Jennifer Lawrence, but not for that try.
They are scraping the barrel. I don't know.
I mean, in the film, she is a political figure, and we have mentioned.
It's not been as much of a banner year for the women as it has for the men. In the supporting side, on the actors, I think, again, there's another prohibitive favourite, which is J.K. Simmons for his performance in Whiplash, which we're going to be reviewing in a couple of podcast time.
This talk Norton's going to get the nod for Birdman as well, but I, to be honest, I can't see him winning it.
No. He's very good in it.
Yeah, but I think there'll be a lot of competition this year.
I think if you look at the supporting category from last year as well, it was a very strong category.
Yeah.
But similar to the best actress that we just spoke about, last year Jared Leto won it and he was heads and shoulders. Mm-hmm. Even though it was a very difficult category, he was heads and shoulders above everyone else. It's no criticism to the other guys. He was just that good. And this year we've got a similar situation where I think if J.K. Simmons gets in for Whiplash, it looks very likely he's going to take it.
Yeah. Robert Duvall has been mentioned for the judge. I don't think he'll necessarily make the cut, but he's got into a few of the critics' lists. The supporting guys from Foxcatcher are being touted as well, especially Mark Ruffalo. A lot of people saying he's going to make the cut.
It's just very difficult when it's kind of split between the two of them. One rarely wins it because they're looking at two people from the same film. A lot of the time they can't decide between either of them, so they just go for someone from a different film.
Yeah.
Let them wrestle it out.
Brilliant. Oh, brilliant.
We'll be actually reviewing that on our next podcast, episode 12, so we're looking forward to that.
And how about on the female supported side? One of the people that that the critics are talking about is Jessica Chastain for her performance in A Most Violent Year, which we've not seen. She's a very, very good actress, though.
Well, you got Tilda Swinton, you mentioned Snowpiercer.
Yeah, she is unbelievable in that. I don't think she'll make the cut. I don't think it's the sort of film that's going to make an impact with the Academy, which is a shame because she's brilliant in it.
It's a shame because there are two people that I looked at and thought they deserve, for their performances, they deserve a critical acclaim.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they're going to get it. And one of them is Rene Russo from Nightcrawler.
Yeah.
That she's brilliant.
Yeah, fantastic.
And the other is Carrie Coon from Gone Girl.
Yeah, she was so good in that.
Yeah, I don't think she's going to get a nod.
No.
But
We might see...
if she gets it, it's fully deserved.
Mm.
We might see Emma Stone as well for Birdman. She might get a...
She could get
it. Never know.
People are saying good things about her.
And a lot of the time, people do pick up... If several actors from one film are nominated for other categories, and then it's almost like best picture, best screenplay, things like that, best director... A lot of the time, you see them thrown in as well.
Yeah, it tends to snowball like that. Another potential one is Keira Knightley.
Yeah, Imitation Game.
She was very, very good. Wasn't annoying in the film.
But it's similar to Birdman in that respect. Imitation Game starts picking up a lot of praise.
You kind of have to justify it, don't you, by throwing everything at it.
So what do we think about best directors then? Who do you think is going to be in the mix? I think Fincher for Gone Girl might get the nod.
I think he'll get the nod. Yeah. I don't think he'll win it, but I think he'll get a nod.
Yeah.
Christopher Nolan.
I don't think so.
No, if he does,
I'll be surprised.
Fair play to him.
Yeah.
They didn't nominate him for Best Director for The Dark Knight. They're not going to nominate him for this shit.
Excellent. But then...
Michael Bay.
Michael Bay. Alejandro González Iñárritu.
Yeah.
For Birdman, yeah.
Surely, for Boyhood... how do you pronounce his surname?
It's either Linklater or Linklater.
Linklater, yeah. Surely, 12 years of his life spent on the film. He's got to have some credit.
Yeah, I think he will
get it. He'd be gutted if he didn't win it, wouldn't he?
He would be.
Yeah.
So, there's quite a few names in the mix. A lot of people are saying that Ava DuVernay might get a nomination. She directed Selma, and I think if she were to be nominated, I think she'd be the first black woman to be nominated for the Best Director,
really?
which could be a big thing, yeah.
Wow. So, finally, what about picture then, I suppose?
I mean, that's broad. I think they can
This is difficult because a lot of them haven't actually come out over here
yet. This is true, yeah.
So I wouldn't really want to judge until I'd seen everything.
Mm. Yeah.
But from
what you've seen online about people talking...
Well, from what I have seen, I could see Imitation Game getting...
Imitation Game, Theory of Everything.
Yeah.
I think Gone Girl will probably make the cut.
Birdman. Definitely Boyhood.
Yeah.
Interstellar, maybe?
I don't think so. I think Interstellar. I think it will be shut out of everything except the technical categories.
Yeah.
I think all your graphical and your sound and all that, even though the sound has been ridiculed by some people because he was using a new system, I think that's going to break through in those, all those below the line technical categories. Yeah. I think it'll get shitloads of noms, but nothing in the main categories.
Transformers: Age of Extinction.
That will be nominated in the graphical and the sound categories.
But again, they're campaigning for it to get the best picture.
Who is Michael Bay's mum? Ridiculous.
This is actually true.
Get out.
This is actually true. Imagine it won.
But there's things like American Sniper as well that could be up there. I mean,
yeah,
we talked about Clint
Eastwood. Clint Eastwood, yeah.
Yeah, that's a very dark horse. That one,
he could generally get in there as well. I mean, again, the Academy like Clint Eastwood as well. Generally,
they love him.
Everything he makes, they seem to really enjoy.
Yeah.
And he is a great director.
He is.
Well, it's going to be exciting. As Ben said, if you go on skiptheend.co.uk around sort of, what, 10th, 12th of January?
Yeah, something like that. The nominations go out on the 15th, so a couple of days before that, we'll put up online our full predictions for the nominations for the top six categories we've just mentioned, and then we'll see who gets the most right.
Fantastic. And then we'll have an Oscars special in a couple of episodes later.
That's right.
We're actually announcing the winners, and we'll have a bit of a competition.
We won't be announcing the winners.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, live stream.
Yeah, we're doing it.
We won't be there, unfortunately.
Well, we couldn't do a worse job than James Franco did a couple of years ago.
Our schedules conflicted, unfortunately, so we had to turn it down.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But,
we're going to see Dumb and Dumber 2 again, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, we're actually going to an event with Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels. So.
Was that opening a supermarket?
No, it's
opening Asda's.
It's actually Jeff Daniels' funeral. Thank you very much. Right, guys, time for your favourite part of the week. It's questions time.
Yeah. Excellent. Love it. Love a Q&A.
So, first of all, on Twitter, we've had @funk2k. Favourite newcomer actor or actress you've seen this year? So maybe there's a film that you've watched or a performance, maybe debut performance?
Do you know what? I can't remember his name off the top of my head, which is a shame. But it was the lad who played the young Alan Turing in The Imitation Game.
Yeah, great call. Bloody hell, it yeah.
He was superb. I thought he was so good for a young lad. And I don't think he'd been anything before. He might have been in like a couple of TV shows or something. Yeah, it's Alex Lawther, that's it. He's one to watch out for, I'd say.
Oh, definitely. I'd agree with that. He was very good in The Imitation Game. Just put in an absolute sterling performance, really.
Yeah.
Especially for what appears to be such a young actor as well. For me, I'd probably say it's not a film. It's actually Robin Lord Taylor from Gotham, who plays the young Oswald Cobblepot.
Yeah.
He's put in an absolute fantastic performance as the Penguin. And probably the best we've seen since Danny DeVito.
Yeah.
And he's right here with us today.
Robin Lord Taylor for me, absolute breakout star of Gotham. The only thing that made it worth watching, really, for me, for the first 8 episodes.
He's very good. He was in a couple of episodes of Walking Dead as well, as a really minor character. Yeah, I liked him a lot. Mark, how about you?
Ella Coltrane from Boyhood, who plays Mason.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, I know when he started the film, he was only about 7. So it's not like he probably even knew what he was doing at that age, probably. But the fact he's done that 12 years, and you are always engaged in his life. And I love the fact that film didn't use different actors to show the different stages of his life.
Actually,
and you do
well.
Actually get really into the character, and you think, wow, look at the way it's grown and the way he's matured.
But really odd thing for a kid, that must be from 7 years old, though.
Mm. Do you know what I really like about it as well? Like, even if that film didn't do very well, he's got that on DVD to watch his 12 years of his life.
It's the best home movie ever.
It is.
Just the idea that...
really good budget.
The idea that you're going to see, I'm going out with my friends. Oh, you can't, why? Ethan Hawke's coming around. I'm going to film some more.
Oh, Ethan, again? He's always bloody here.
We've had another from Twitter, which is Fox1D. And if the 1D stands for One Direction, we're going to block you and never, ever write into us again, you bellend. Right, so, best performance from an actor that you didn't actually rate beforehand. So, a good example for me could be Matthew McConaughey. He did a lot of shit until he did last year.
Until he mudded 2012.
Well, yeah, that's when he started to get good, but something like that.
Keira Knightley, then.
Didn't, he never rated her.
Didn't rate her. I just thought she was that same posh porcelain doll and everything. I grew to like her a little bit in that Seeking a Friend for the End of the World with Steve Carell. I warmed her a little bit in that, but then it was Imitation Game that made me really think she's the real deal. All of my answers are just Imitation Game so far.
Yeah,
I need to think
of
something else.
To be honest, I'd echo that sentiment.
Yeah.
Keira Knightley, I wasn't a huge fan. I saw him Seeking a Friend for the End of the World as well. And I didn't think the film itself was that great. So I was marginal on both her and Carell's performance. But in Imitation Game, she was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to echo that as well, because I hate her.
As we went into in quite some detail.
And, you know, listen to that on our Imitation episode, because that's actually a really good review. we actually discussed how much we liked her. But yeah, I hated her. and I honestly wanted her dead. But now, I don't. I actually like her.
Yeah.
And I'd love to have her on the episode to discuss.
It's amazing how one good acting performance can save your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's cancelled the hit on it.
Yeah. Next one on Facebook, we've had Will Price. Which movie, in your opinion, deserves a part three? He's put this goes by the fact that we've always discussed how third films don't work, and especially Matrix 3, etc.
No, it wasn't Matrix 3.
Is there a film that there's only been a couple? Maybe, and this is me pointing out, Finnair.
Good work at that, pulling out.
I was going to say Blade, but they did please Trinity.
Yeah, yeah, Triple H.
Worst film ever. Gremlins, because Gremlins 1 and 2 are great. Mm. What did you talk about earlier on this episode, and that we said it's a really good sequel?
At Wayne's World, I wouldn't want to see a Wayne's World
movie.
No.
45-year-old Mike Myers with a baseball cap.
I tell you what, I genuinely would love to see a third one too. I would want to see a third Ghostbusters. I don't mean the reboot with some jolly
you
women.
Mean with actual,
yeah, I mean the original
guy.
Not all four of them. One of them's dead. Yeah. But the three are alive.
Yeah.
I want to see a sequel to Ghostbusters 2. I don't want to see a Ghostbusters
that
reboot.
That would be quite cool.
I want to see Gremlins 3. Make sure it's done with puppets. No CGI. None of that rubbish. I want to see another film. Gizmo's now. I don't know. Got us some leader of some gang, and I don't know, he turns badass. In every other film, he's always the saviour. Oh, it's Gizmo's cute. He isn't. He gets sick of it. And decides to...
They need to get you in to write the script, Mark. You've got this one down.
I've actually got a meeting in a bit, so... Adam, anything you can think of? Matrix?
I generally hate sequels, you know that. Yeah. Unless there's actually a proper narrative to it, and a lot of the time there isn't. Fuck it. Short Circuit 3.
I watched Short Circuit last week. It was on TV.
Yeah.
That would be great.
Was it on ITV?
Just Johnny 5 again. Maybe he's grown old. He's had some robot kids. I don't know. Some shit like that, basically. Yeah.
So we've had Francis Williams come through on Facebook. And this is literally word for word what they've put. The actress that you most want to bang.
I'm not answering that.
That's degrading.
Yeah. Degrades women, which I hate.
Yeah, I'm not answering that.
If the question was going to be, what actresses do you find very attractive or beautiful, then I will say Scarlett Johansson, just so I can give him an answer.
Yeah. Kate Beckinsale.
Yeah.
Emma Stone.
Brilliant. And Francis, if there's one thing you take away from this podcast, bang should never be used as a term to make love.
Shame.
Andy Thompson. Film you would like to see on a big screen that you never got chance to. At the cinema, I get to see every film on the big screen.
The film that I really want to see on a big screen, which we're going to get to do, I think, in April when it's re-released, is Blade Runner.
Yeah.
I bang on about this film every bloody podcast, so I apologise to the listeners. But I love that film, and I can't wait to see it on the big screen.
That's fair enough. I'd probably go with Star Wars, A New Hope.
Yeah.
So you go back to the...
Yeah.
Did you not see them on the big screen when they were re-released?
No,
with the crappy digital advancements?
No, but I'd actually want to see the originals.
Oh, yeah.
Without any kind of editing done to them, the actual originals, boom.
You never know. With Disney at the moment, they could do that in a few years.
No, they'll just release the CGI advanced.
Wait till George Lucas dies and do it.
Brilliant.
That's what they could do then. They could do what they want. I'd like to see probably something like
Spider-Man
Saving
3.
Private Ryan, because I never got to see it in the cinema.
That
would be unbelievable.
Just the opening scene.
Yeah, surround sound and everything. Yeah. Now, it's good on Blu-ray and DVD, etc. But yeah, and final question. Richard Booth, my mate. We haven't mentioned him for a while, so I left him out. He's put, I'd love to know what your guys' favourite world cinema movies are. Do you think we're quite ignorant to world cinema?
That's a really good question, actually. I think I mentioned on a podcast a few weeks back or months back that I really like a lot of sort of Japanese and Korean films. I'm not talking about Kurosawa. I'm not that highbrow. I just like the ones with killings. I absolutely love Old Boy.
Yeah,
I think
Old Boy
is my favourite.
Old Boy's very good. Yeah. I mean, the standard Battle Royale.
Battle Royale, superb. Yeah.
Amelie for me.
Amelie's a good movie.
Or Delicatessen, or City of Lost Children.
Yeah.
All good.
Yeah, I resent the fact that we're being held up as ignorant to this.
One day we should do a bit of a special section.
Special.
We've got a final question from Thomas Hill. Mm-hmm. Can you think of a film that you would like to change the outcome of a story, whether it's the end or a certain scene, but you have the power to go into that film and make one big change to it that could have a complete different outcome to the movie?
I can't really answer that one now. I think that's a thinker. I think we might need to
I think my original answer is Interstellar, but that probably changes when I thought about it.
Philadelphia, he doesn't have AIDS. But yeah, that'd just be a bloke walking around.
Actually, you're fine.
Hours. Yeah, yeah, you're not got AIDS at all. But no,
we'll think on that. We'll bring that back to the next episode.
Yeah,
let's do that. Let's have a think about
that
one.
Come back. Yeah. We like your questions, so keep them coming. Please
facebook.com/skipthempodcast, Twitter at STTE Podcast, and as Adam mentioned, we still do email, which is skiptheend@icloud.com.
So that brings us to the end of episode 11 of the Skip to the End podcast, the first one of the new year. As it's new year, boys, I'm going to throw this on you. Any new year's resolutions, Mark?
Really improve at editing and mastering our podcasts each week. So hopefully you'll notice throughout the year that the quality picks up and, yeah, be a better person.
Yeah, work on that one.
Yeah.
Adam?
Not to go to the gym as much.
To be fair, you're getting too bulky.
Yeah. These bare gains, bruv.
Yeah.
Too much.
Mine's just to keep being awesome.
Wow.
Pretty much. So on the next episode coming out in a couple of weeks, we're going to review Foxcatcher, new film starring Steve Carell and Mark Ruffalo. We're also going to talk about our top three time travel movies. We're also going to talk about movies where we'd like to change the ending or change the outcome. And we've got our rewatch. So we'll speak to you then.
There will be another one who'll hover over you beneath the sun. Tomorrow, see the things that never come. Today, when you see me.